This is Solidarity News on Radio Labour.
This is a Radio Labour World Report recorded on Friday, October 18th, 2019. I'm Mark Boulanger. In the report this week, national debt levels are again rising to dangerous levels while corporations hide their trillions in profits and workers are victimized. The Labour Start report about union events around the world and singing. This is Radio Labour. Labour leaders are warning that sovereign debt levels around the world are dangerously high and that this may hit working people hard. To find out more about the crisis, I talked to Daniel Bertossa. Mr. Bertossa is the Assistant General Secretary of Public Services International. The PSI is the global union which represents public service unions at the world level. I asked Mr. Bertossa why sovereign debt levels are such a concern and how widespread the problem is.
Well, Mark, the problem has always been widespread. Since 1970, on average, 8 countries per annum have suffered from a sovereign debt crisis. And when you take into account their neighbours and their trading partners, most workers in their lives will feel the consequences of a sovereign debt crisis. But recently, the overall debt levels have been rising, even from those background levels, and UN figures have shown that global debt stock has risen almost 14-fold from the 1980s, when it was just $14 trillion US dollars, to almost $200 trillion US dollars in 2016. And so that's quite an incredible increase in the amount of debt that's floating around out there. And this is happening for a couple of reasons, but the main overarching reason is what we call, or what economists call, the creation of a rentier economy. And this is an economy where corporations are extracting wealth from the economy as opposed to actually creating it. And one of the reasons for this is because of the way in which debt has increased through things like financial deregulation, which has allowed an increase in risky lending and often outright speculative lending. And this has seen finance become a much, much larger part of the global economy. And at exactly the same time, governments have given away their ability to control this enormous amount of money that's floating around the world because they've signed up to bilateral investment treaties and trade and investment agreements that mean that they've given away their capital controls. They've given away their ability to control the movements of capital in and out of their country. And in fact, what we've seen is that these movements are increasing. And so they were at about 5% of world GDP in 1990. But in 2070, these capital flows around the world are now about 20% of world GDP. And what's important as we think about this rentier economy, this economy where corporations capture wealth and as opposed to making it, is that these capital flows have risen over that period 3 times faster than GDP. So we're seeing more money moving around, but we're seeing less of that money being actually used to invest in things like factories. At the same time, we're also seeing a shift in the amount of that wealth that workers are getting. So again, in the 1970s, about 55% of GDP went to workers, and by 2015, that had fallen to about 40%. And so for workers who are attempting to make ends meet or to keep up with the cost of living, workers and consumers are being forced to take out more household debt. So overall, we've got an economy that's economic growth is based on debt and extraction of wealth, not production. We've got more debt. We've got less financial regulation, less capital controls that allow governments to control this larger amount of debt. And we've got workers getting less and being forced into higher levels of household debt.
Why are labor organizations so concerned about sovereign debt?
When a national debt crisis hits, it's usually workers who suffer. And it's often not those who've assumed that debt in the first place, the private sector or the banks. And so growth drops, jobs disappear, and often inflation rises and the cost of living goes up. So workers struggle to make ends meet. And when this happens, governments will often try to balance the books. So they cut pensions, they cut public services, and they also will try to privatize, often at exactly the worst time in terms of getting a reasonable price for assets, if privatization was ever a good idea. And the other thing that we'll often do is that the governments will try to restart economic growth by deregulating labor rules and cutting wages. It also is a problem of loss of democracy. When a government gets itself into a debt crisis, it finds that it becomes beholden to the creditors. Sometimes they're private creditors. Sometimes they're the international financial institutions. And these creditors are able to impose conditions on that government. And they usually are the ones that I've mentioned, cuts to pensions, cuts to public services and privatizations. And these all hurt workers. And combined, what this often does is creates political instability. Because it wasn't the workers normally who were responsible for the creation of the debt crisis, but when this debt is socialized, it's workers who often pay the price. And this creates a high degree of political instability. And we've seen all over the world when this happens, the rise of nationalist politics and right-wing governments. And that is something that workers never, ever benefit from.
What are some of the solutions for handling the debt crisis?
It's always important to remember that debt is not a problem in itself. And governments have debt, just like households have debt, for very productive reasons. And so when governments are borrowing, often at you know, fairly competitive rates to fund infrastructure or to fund productive spending, then that's normally okay. And what is really useful is these arbitrary rules we see where governments set themselves a certain level of debt or they impose a certain level of debt on another country. Because when the economy is in a downturn, it makes sense to borrow more to stimulate the economy. And when the economy is doing well, then it makes sense to rein that spending in and borrow less and pay down that debt as a way of cooling down economies that are overheating. But of course, it's always best to avoid racking up too much debt. And one of the most important lessons we've learned from the global financial crisis is that we must re-regulate financial markets, because what we've seen is that if you allow banks in particular, but also large corporations, to borrow without consequence, to create risk but not have to assume the consequences for when those risks go badly, then that creates a lot of what they call moral hazard, which is when risks are created to the economy that individuals don't have to take responsibility for. And in fact, this is what we saw in the global financial crisis. A lot of the debts that we see in countries today, the governments have taken on, but they started off as private debts, and the government assumed the responsibility for those private debts. And part of this is that we need to stop corporations lobbying and capturing the rulemaking process, because at the moment we've created an economy where these corporations can borrow, run up risk, but not assume that responsibility. And that's happened because a lot of these corporations are lobbying international rulemakers to allow this to happen.
Here with his report about union events around the world is Labor Start correspondent Derek Blackadder.
Each day, Labor Start's volunteers collect hundreds of news items about workers and their unions from around the world in 31 languages. Here's a small sample of those stories. Our top stories section included links to coverage of the condemnation by unions of Turkey's invasion of Syria, union reaction to the Brexit deal, and the global mobilization in solidarity with persecuted trade unionists in Indonesia and in Algeria. We also had news of strikes and lockouts in dozens of countries. Here are just a few highlights. We carried stories about wage strikes by prison guards in Paraguay, public transport workers in South Korea, Venezuelan and American teachers, and forestry workers in Canada. Strikes against rollbacks were being mounted by American auto workers, Canadian laundry workers, and mine workers in India. Walkouts caused by ongoing government austerity policies were underway this week in Algeria, where education workers were fighting for a fair share of their country's budget. France, where firefighters were resisting changes to public pensions, and in Bolivia and Spain, where healthcare workers were protesting service cuts and understaffing by performing only urgent duties. Attacks on basic labor rights provoked responses from municipal workers in Costa Rica who were protesting new laws that limit their ability to strike, and banana plantation workers in Panama who won a wage increase along with recognition of their union. Our Working Women pages, now available in 8 languages, included stories about the survey of British workers that revealed that 25% of women will not report sexual harassment in the workplace for fear of being sacked, and how Irish unions are working to integrate menopause into workplace sickness policies. The free health and safety newswire we offer in cooperation with Hazards magazine carried stories to hundreds of union websites around the world about the mounting death toll in Bangladeshi shipbreaking yards, the fight to end workplace murder after the 5th death at a Canadian bakery, and the struggle for safe work by Australian food delivery riders. Currently, Labour Start is running 2 online actions. Take just a few seconds out of your day and join thousands of trade unionists around the world in helping workers make their lives better, or even help save those lives. This is Derek Blackadder from Labour Start, reporting for Radio Labour.
Now here is Union Nation with Rebel Girl. That's it. International labor news you can use. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about global solidarity.